Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Pennsylvanians who are arrested on criminal charges can have their records wiped clean after 10 years of not getting in trouble under the state's new Clean Slate Law. Pennsylvania is the first state in the country with a Clean Slate Law. One of the law's co-sponsors is Republican State Representative Cheryl DeLosier of Cumberland County, who joins us this morning. Representative DeLosier, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Scott. Glad to be here.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. If you have a question or comment that you'd like to leave on Facebook, go to WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Representative DeLosier, I briefly described what the Clean Slate Law will do, but I left a lot out there. Just so you could explain this, but tell us what the Clean Slate Law will do.
Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it. The ability for us as a state to take a look at someone's past. I mean, you and I and many others that are listening, I'm sure, can remember back when you did a lot of dumb things as our youth. And as we've matured, hopefully, we've stopped that. But the ability for us to have made mistakes, the ability for someone to have a misdemeanor. And when you say a clean slate, it really, to be specific, this bill deals with misdemeanors of the second and third degree. So the ability for us to say that someone that made a mistake, as got an underage drinking or, was disorderly conduct when they were, in college or something like that, 10 years later, they have not had any interaction with the police. They have not committed another crime. But they still have to check that box and say, yes, they were convicted of a crime when applying for a job or applying for housing. And this is a barrier for people to work in our communities and become part of, our tax base across our state. So those folks that are on, that cannot get jobs, those are the ones that end up needing our assistance when it comes to government support or it needs to our government program. So this is an removal of those barriers. This takes away from those that made a stupid mistake 10 years ago. They've been clean. They've now gone on with their lives. They have families, they have children, and they made a mistake. So we're basically saying, hey, look, you were stupid. You paid your crime. You paid all your restitution if required. You've done what you need to do, and we're going to give you that second chance.
So a couple things along those lines. You mentioned that, and we know that there are a lot of jobs you apply for or maybe looking to rent an apartment or, a lot of cases where an application will ask that question of whether you have been arrested or have been convicted of a crime. Under this law, if someone meets the criteria that it was a misdemeanor and mm-hmm. they have not been arrested for 10 years, they've paid all the cost and court cost and all that, so they can check the no box?
They can. And what we're talking about is law enforcement still has access. If for some reason they would have an interaction. And nationally, statistics show us that, if someone has not committed another crime within 5 years, the likeliness is slim to none that they're going to do it. We've doubled that and made it 10 years. So the likeliness of somebody, making a mistake again and doing something stupid again is very, very slim, and if it will happen at all. And that's the idea behind it, in the sense that if they were able to, like I said, build their lives again. And we're not talking about people. And the other thing to be clear is that there are exceptions. So you are not eligible whatsoever if your crime has anything to do with a drug, has anything to do with guns, has anything to do with a sexual offense or a child. So there are exemptions as to the fact that you're not even, looked at for a clean slate if it's a violent crime. There's nothing, you're not even, like I said, eligible. So the ability for us to take a look at these very minimal crimes that somebody, like I said, made a mistake, the ability for us to say to them, look, okay, you were dumb, you paid your crime, and we're going to move on from there.
So, but I just want to get back to the application part for a second. Is there anything written into the law that says that, I don't know, say someone finds out later that, you know, that this person said no on the application, mm-hmm. and they find out later that they had been arrested and had done time in prison, that they wouldn't be fired, that there's some protection against that.
Yes, there is. We're talking about folks that have served a couple months, possibly because of a low level crime. Yes, to answer your question, there is, because they are legally allowed to say no. I have not been convicted of a crime after the 10 years, and when it is limited access, because the ability for them to say, look, you know, I did what I needed to do. I am now a upstanding citizen, and I really can do this job, or I really do need this apartment to rent for me and my family. And again, like I said, there are protections for the business. If someone had been convicted of a shoplifting crime, 10 years later, we're clear of that crime and, have moved on, the ability for them to say no, I've been clean slated and I can say no, there is that ability. They are telling the truth, and the business is also, there are protections in there for them as well.
When you say that they've been clean slated, how will someone know that they have officially been clean slated?
They can check the records with the judicial systems, and the limited access will go into effect in 180 days where they can start petitioning if they believe that they comply. The judicial system, AOPC, and the folks that we have worked very hard with, it was a bipartisan effort. We worked, to be clear, Scott, this started, back in 2016. There was two Democrats from Philadelphia and two Republicans from central Pennsylvania, Scott Wagner, Cheryl DeLozier, Jordan, and Senator Williams. We all worked together because we recognized that people, could use a second chance, and the ability for that bipartisan to move forward. So we've worked with AOPC on this limited access, and how are they going to establish the system to be able to clean slate someone that is eligible after 10 years. So they are going to have a computer system that will be able to look at the records for this, like I said, misdemeanors twos and threes, and be able to say, okay, they've complied. They've paid their dues in the sense of any restitution or their time that needed to be served. They've paid their ticket, if that's a requirement, because some of these offenses just required a ticket being paid. And they are eligible, and it's a nonviolent, like I said, and it does not have any of the exemptions. And they will be, like I said, marked as to the fact that it is limited access, and law enforcement will have that ability to look. But the rest of the community, they are able to say that they were I've now reverted to be a clean citizen, and I can move on with my life.
How would law enforcement use this information?
A law enforcement, if something should come again, if somebody should reoffend, in 15 years, which is very, very unlikely, but should it happen, law enforcement would still have access to all of the records. The records are not, the difference here is that it is a limited access. It is not an expungement. We are not eliminating the record. We are simply allowing law enforcement, the record is still there for law enforcement to use if it should be necessary.
And I think something you just mentioned is one of the most important parts of this bill, is that it is not an expungement. It does not mean that this is eliminated from a criminal record. These people
Correct.
Still have criminal records. It's just that it is not available for sight other than from law enforcement, right?
Correct. And I think that that's a big distinction, primarily because we want law enforcement to have all the tools they need in order to have all of the information. So if the court system needed it, if the law enforcement needed it, it is there. We are not trying to say that it never happened. What we are trying to say is that and work forward. And that's why I think it was a bipartisan move, is the fact that, you have somebody, as we have said, that made a dumb mistake, that did something that they regret, and they ended up having a bad night. Okay, fine. No one was hurt. It was not a violent crime. And the ability for us to say, you know, you need to continue this for in perpetuity, I think, you know, comes back around, in all honesty, and costing us more, because these are folks that cannot get jobs, cannot get housing. And where do they turn if they can't get either of those two things? They turn back to the government system and need assistance, whether it's, you know, our welfare system or any of our other government-funded systems. So we're working this two ways, in the sense of giving people a second chance. We're making sure that they have the ability to move on with their lives, and we're making sure that they don't come back around and need government assistance when they are fully able to work, and they want to work, and they want to have their lives and do their jobs that they're very good at. And we want them to do that and be good citizens and good parents and good family people in our community.
We have a couple of listener questions here. One is, what impact would this have on people seeking military service?
Well, the federal government in and of itself, like I said, has full access, you know, and they supersede us. This law is Pennsylvania, and that is it. This is, you know, because that was actually a question that we did have, and we had a long discussion about that, as to the fact that if somebody committed a crime in Ohio, we have no jurisdiction whatsoever in Ohio, and we have no jurisdiction federally. So if someone is applying to their federal you know, to become part of our military service, they would have access to this. This is simply Pennsylvania.
So just to be clear, just like that application says, when it asks the question of whether you've been arrested, someone applying for something having to do with the federal government or the military would have to honestly answer that question as yes.
They would have to, you know, at this point, you know, it's interesting because the answer would be, you know, if they're applying in Pennsylvania, the answer would be no, but their record would be available, and there would be no retribution or anything like that if they were a Pennsylvania resident because of this law. The federal government would be able to pull the record, and they would have it, and they'd have that conversation. And we actually did talk to those at the federal level, and they were fine with that as to the ability that, look, we have all the information we need, and that's something we can just do on a case by case.
Okay, so again, I'm just going to repeat. So because I said they would have to answer yes, the answer is they, on that application, that military application, if they were a Pennsylvanian 10 years without getting in trouble, they could answer no.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have another email question. Paul says, I seriously cannot agree. No matter the severity of the crime committed, there are people in society that will never forgive, no matter how long you have been with zero negative contact with police or other authorities. I'm sure you've heard from people like that.
So they're saying that no one will forgive them for making a mistake?
Yeah, basically what Paul is saying is that if you've committed a crime, that it should stay on your record lifetime.
Okay. And to answer that, I mean, to be clear, it does stay on your record, as we had said, with law enforcement. And I understand both sides of this, and I do, because I've talked to – this is a long process. You know, this is a two-year – you know, we had hundreds of meetings and phone calls and dialogue, primarily, you know, because we have so many groups that were in this – on this bill that were from totally opposite ends of the political spectrum, of the policy spectrum. And I do recognize that there are some people that have zero, you know, have a kind of a zero tolerance type of outlook when it comes to any crime whatsoever. And I have to say that, you know, I'm from a law enforcement family. I agree that, you know, you make it, you do a crime, you do the time, and you should be held accountable. But I also have to say that I guess I've also come to the realization that, you know, there are some times when a 19-year-old kid makes a stupid mistake. You know, I can honestly think that no one could say they've been led a perfect life. And I guess I've come to the realization that people deserve that second chance, and it's either, you know, hold hard line and push and say no, zero, zero, zero. We have no tolerance for any mistake, and have these people come back around and actually cost us more in social services and everything else, when we could have allowed, removed this barrier and allowed them back in the on the rolls as productive, law-abiding citizens in our communities. So I guess there has to be a little bit of give, and I don't think any of us can say we've towed the line every single second of our entire lives. So I think people deserve to get a little bit of a second chance.
I want to talk more about that in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Our guest during this portion of the program is Republican State Representative Cheryl DeLosier of Cumberland County. She was one of the co-sponsors of Pennsylvania's Clean Slate Law. Pennsylvania is the first state in the country with a Clean Slate Law. Those who have been arrested for misdemeanor criminal charges, if they stay out of trouble for 10 years, pay all their fines and court costs, their slate can be wiped clean. Law enforcement still would have access to that. If you have a question or a comment, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. You talked about your own background in law enforcement just a moment ago. Here's a political question. You are a Republican, and there are many in your party who consider themselves law and order first. Does this fit the law and order category?
I think it does. We spoke to DAs, we talked to the entire AOPC with the judicial system. We talked to police officers, and honestly, to be honest, I mean, some police officers don't agree with this, and some are very much of the zero tolerance and that type of thought process. So we have had so many conversations with folks that do prosecute, that do make people seek justice for people that have been the victims of crime. And I am a huge advocate for victims of crime. I mean, that has been something that has been one of my biggest issues as to the fact of making sure that victims receive their restitution. And if nothing else, this reinforces that, because so many times, victims receive less than 10% of victims receive restitution. This forces people to make sure that if somebody destroyed, if a kid was out with a baseball bat and was destroying property and nailing down mailboxes and took out 10 mailboxes in a neighborhood, and that person is told to repay those 10 families to restore their property to what it was, that they do that. Because time and time again, that doesn't happen. So in order for this to be applicable to them, they have to have done what the courts have demanded, which very few people do. So many victims receive nothing when it comes to these property crimes or something like that. And this requires them to do that. So, when it comes to the law and order, I think that, again, many of those that are in law enforcement recognize that people do stupid things. And why they do them, who knows, what was happening at the time. But they do recognize that they're good people that made a dumb mistake.
One of the statistics that kind of opened my eyes a little bit was that 1 in 3 Pennsylvanians have a criminal record. That came from the governor's office, and I'm sure you're aware of that statistic, but kind of surprised me that like 33% of the population out there has some type of criminal record where they have broken a law. We have an email question here, Representative. Mike says, a misdemeanor drug paraphernalia charge can prevent the ability to obtain a Pennsylvania weapon carry permit. Would applying for this clean slate allow a person the ability to gain a permit? And I'm going to add to that and ask the question, will someone be able to buy a gun under this?
Well, and the ability for us, and again, this is a long learning process, because misdemeanor ones in Pennsylvania prohibit you from owning a gun. And so if they receive that crime, then what we did was actually ones were part of the process initially, and we backed off of that because a lot of it had to do with the fact of this issue. Because what we ended up doing was misdemeanor ones can be clean slated, but the bottom line is that they have to be reviewed by not only the DA and a judge in order to be clean slated. It is not automatic. And the reason behind that is because if it is falls under this issue of buying a gun, they still will be prohibited. This does not change that. This does not, and that's why misdemeanor ones are not part of the automatic limited access, just twos and threes, because they do not prohibit you from owning a gun. And so the ones that possibly could come up are to be reviewed before any clean slate is eligible. So that issue did come up as to the fact of gun ownership, and actually it was something that I learned recognizing the different gradings in Pennsylvania, because in Pennsylvania, some of our misdemeanor ones in other states are felonies, which I did not know. not being an attorney, and this is not my, you know, that for that area and everything else. So I was educated as to the fact of that requirement. And that's where, again, we towed the line with a lot of different policy groups and bipartisan on both sides to say, hey, look, this is a big concern, and this is a safety issue. And they agreed. We towed, you know, kind of got a compromise going through, and that's why misdemeanor ones are to be reviewed. And they fall under Act 5, which was processed in 2016, which also allows for that consideration to be limited access, but after review. It's not an automatic process.
Michael is in York. Michael, you're on the air.
Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I wanted to congratulate Representative Delosier and all those that supported this, but I'm also going to push to take the next step. You know, here in the cities, we have concentrated poverty that lead people to not only do dumb things, but it's also poverty pushing the drug dealing and issues that come up as misdemeanor ones and felonies. So we have a severe issue of so many people being virtually untouchable in the economy, people that want to get back into the proper economy that can't. So I just really wanted to push the discussion towards the next step, which would be the misdemeanor ones and the felonies, the nonviolent felonies that occurred. And again, a 10-year period of someone coming out of that economy, coming out of that poverty and doing the right thing should really show that they deserve a full second chance.
Thank you very much for your call. What about that? Is this a first step?
It's as I said to somebody recently, this is kind of where I get off the train. I don't believe, I guess it comes back to that law and order kind of thing. I believe in giving people a second chance. But a felony is a felony. And I would have a much harder time going to that next step. Because of what it entails, what types of crimes it entails. Even like I said, the misdemeanor ones gave me a lot of heartburn when taking a look at what some of them were. And that's why we backed off of that and made that ones that were reviewable, because to me that those are not dumb crimes, you know, something done at the spur of the moment because you're a dumb kid. A lot of those are premeditated. A lot of those are thought out and ones that they're done with all recognition of what they were doing.
Is a misdemeanor one? Give us some examples of misdemeanor ones.
Oh, good Lord. You need an attorney here for this to start quoting. A lot of the drug charges are a lot of those using weapons. A lot of those against a person, like a sexual crime, could be a misdemeanor one that was downgraded. And again, like with a clean slate, those are totally excluded. That has nothing, you know, cannot happen and are not eligible. And so we excluded them not only because of the exclusions, but also because of the seriousness of it, that it is against a person, that it is with a weapon, that it is drug dealing. It's not just a little bit of having, you know, a small amount of drugs on you. It's the amount, it's the ability to say, I was selling, I was doing these types of things. So it's much more serious crimes and ones that I think that, like I said, are done with intent versus, like I said, doing something stupid.
But let's take a step back, and I'm not advocating either way. Just, you know, what some people would say, just like sure. Michael did, is right. That even though those were serious crimes, may have been premeditated, if they go 10 years without getting in trouble, you know, they have the same problems as anyone who has committed a misdemeanor 2, misdemeanor 3, finding a job or, you know, finding an apartment, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. And I don't disagree with that. What I disagree with is I guess, the level of to begin with. And like I said, this is just, I'm not saying others will not continue that fight. I know that when we were talking again, you know, the different groups came in. We had the Eagles and the Steelers. They came in, you know, advocating for felonies. And I was very upfront and said that I don't, you know, this bill will not include felonies. And if they want to move forward with that, it'll need to be a separate bill. And it was not something that they were giving up on, I'm sure. It is just something that will have to happen probably with a different legislator.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take another call from Bonnie in Harrisburg. Bonnie, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes,
really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I have a question. It could be just, you know, a ridiculous one. But are these people then allowed to vote, or were they not eliminated from voting anyway?
Mm. Hey, thank you for your call. You're not allowed to vote after a felony, is that right?
Correct, yes.
Yes, so they can vote even without this law, right?
Correct.
The people who have been convicted of a second or third degree misdemeanor.
That is
a good question, though, because that is an issue that many people are asking around the country. Let's see. A listener asked, my sister pled guilty to possession of more marijuana than just for personal use. She didn't do any jail time. I believe she paid fines and was on probation until her fines were paid. Would this type of charge be clean slated?
It would depend on what the grade was. And I don't know offhand what grade she received.
Well, and that would depend, I think, wouldn't it, on, and again, we're acting like attorneys here, but
which neither of us are.
No. I just played one on the radio. Depend on the amount of marijuana, because if you have more than just personal use, I think doesn't that come down on the charge of with intent to deliver, and that
Correct.
Could be a drug charge.
Correct.
Let's see what else. One of the things that I've noticed, and I've had this conversation with a lot of people here in Pennsylvania, that Pennsylvania, and not just Pennsylvania, but across the country, that there's a real sea change when it comes to criminal justice. It seems as though many people are dealing with the reality that there are many people coming out of jail. They will be released one day, and they better have a way to keep them from breaking the law. And that way is a job, having a stable place to live, and having a stable life. Do you think that this falls under that? And what are some of the other ways that you see in that the criminal justice system is changing?
Well, and I agree with you. I mean, and again, because this is a long process of working on this legislation, we had many, many, many conversations with people who this directly affects. And we had someone at a press conference as well as at the bill signing. And, you know, I was glad that the governor came in, when we were done and got everything through and signed it. I'm glad that it became law because the ability for those that we talk to, to say how this will affect them. And you're right. The thought process with the judicial system is the fact of, you're right, we want them to do their time. I absolutely, if someone hurts someone or someone makes someone a victim, absolutely, 1,000%, I want them to serve and I want that victim to get justice. But the ability for us, like you said, when someone is serving, a 6-month term for something small that, they needed to pay their for their crime. Absolutely. And I agree with that 100%. But the bottom line is after that 6 months, they do need to come out and they do need to be part of society. And we don't want them reverting back, to doing something, bad, and breaking the law. And recidivism is a huge issue. We talk to the Department of Corrections all the time and the secretary talks consistently about recidivism numbers. We need to support, those coming back into our society. I know it's hard. I know that, as an employer, do you want to take somebody that's done hard time? Most likely not, because it's intimidating. Do you want to subject the rest of your employees to this? So there's a lot of questions, and I think that that's why we work with all of the chambers in Pennsylvania as businesses and business owners wanting good employees. Do they want the person that's coming out for murder? Probably not. Do they want the person that maybe, got convicted, of shoplifting a pack of gum as a joke with friends? They're much more likely to give that person that second chance. So it is a big decision, and it is something that is changing because we do recognize that, do we want them in our system? Do we want our government services paying for them for the rest of their lives, not in prison, but just because they can't find a job?
Representative, I know you have another engagement that you have to go to that I'm keeping you from, but one final question. Pennsylvania is first in the country with this. It's unusual that we're first in the country in anything, but there's a lot of national there's a lot of national groups in other states that are watching this in Pennsylvania. Congratulations on being the first in the country.
Thank you. We are. I'm very proud to have sponsored the bill to get this step, and I think that that it's something that many states have talked about, and many states have done different versions. And I think that this is the first time that they've had the clean slate for the M2s and 3s. And I think that other states will follow. And I know nationally they're taking a look at it. And I think that goes back to your question as to the change of mindset, as to the fact of recognizing we can't just dump folks out that have served some time, and just make them the villain of society. We have to recognize that they are coming back into our society, and they are going to be parents, and they are going to be eligible workers if we allow them to. So we need to take a look at both ends of the system. Victims deserve their justice, but and once that justice is served and time is served, we recognize that government services are going to be paying, do we pay for them to stay in jail and go back into jail? Or do we pay for them with government services? Or do we give them a second chance and let them be taxpayers and good, family people in our communities? I think the third one, when possible, is the better choice for our community as a whole.
Republican State Representative Cheryl DeLosier of Cumberland County, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate it.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WIT. Oh, wait, before I go there, I just had a clarification. And this was about voting. And I'm told that ex-offenders have a right to vote in Pennsylvania with stipulations. Felons who have been released from prison or who will be free by the time of election are eligible to vote. Those on probation or parole are also eligible to vote. Just a clarification there. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Mosquitoes that have tested positive for the West Nile virus have turned up in almost half of Pennsylvania's 67 counties this year. So far, no humans have contracted the disease, and the state is committed to trying to control the mosquitoes that spread West Nile. Joining us today, Matt Helwig and Mike Hutchinson with the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection's Vector Management Team. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Yeah, I was looking back over my notes from years past, and we've had the two of you on the program a couple times talking about this. But quite frankly, in the 7 or 8 years that West Nile virus has been around in Pennsylvania, there have been several other things that have popped up that are spread by mosquitoes or ticks. So maybe it's a good time to kind of apply a refresher course. What is West Nile virus?
West Nile virus is a flavivirus of the same disease family of dengue, Zika virus, or yellow fever. It is hosted by birds and then transmitted by mosquitoes. That's how people acquire it, is through the bite of an infected mosquito. It just so happens that people are the dead-end host. They can get sick from the disease, but a mosquito can't acquire it from a person. It can only acquire it from birds, because birds get so sick that they have enough virus in their system that a mosquito can acquire it.
Okay, so I knew that birds were a carrier of this, but didn't realize that, are they the only animal that these mosquitoes prey on?
There's about 62 species of mosquitoes in Pennsylvania. Actually, 63. We just found a new one recently, moving up from the south. And they have a variety of hosts that they feed on. The vast majority of those 62 are mammalian feeders, so they'll feed on deer, humans, dogs, cats, whatever. But there are some that are very specialized. There's one that feeds primarily on frogs. There's some that like reptiles and other amphibians. And then there's a handful that feed predominantly on birds, and those are the ones that we're really concerned about for West Nile virus.
So any specific or species of birds, or I shouldn't say species, but types of birds that they feed on, or just anything that flies?
Yeah, for the avian feeding species, the ones we're concerned about for West Nile, there's certain birds that are very, very susceptible to West Nile virus. In Pennsylvania, anything in the family Corvidae, which would include American crows, fish crows, and blue jays, they die at a very high rate. So they're good indicators for West Nile in an area. If anyone sees those species dead, it's a good idea to call the DEP and we'll get it looked at. And then there's also other birds, mostly in the thrush family. So American robins would be one in the thrush family that are kind of considered super spreaders of West Nile virus. They will contract the virus. They'll have a viremia level that's very high in their blood, but they won't necessarily die from it. But other mosquitoes can bite that species of bird and be able to transmit, pick up the virus and then transmit it to another bird. Or occasionally these bird feeding species will feed on mammals and they'll feed on humans. So that's probably the main way that people are getting infected.
So if you see a dead bird in your yard, leave it alone?
If you see a dead bird in your yard, you can call the DEP, especially if it's one of the species that Mike pointed out. And we'll look at actually collecting that bird or swabbing that bird and testing the swab for the presence of the virus.
But normally, if I would find a dead bird in my yard, I would find a way to get a shovel, a bag, whatever, right, put it in the trash can. Should I leave it alone?
What we recommend, especially if it's one of the species that we're interested in testing, you can put that bird on ice. If it's not one of those species, as you suggested, wear a pair of gloves, stick your hand inside of a bag, grab the bird, pull the bird into the bag itself, close the bag, and throw it in the trash. Mm.
So, as I mentioned in the introduction, 33 of the 67 counties. Is there an update on that? Are we still at 33?
I think Mike just pointed out we are actually at 34.
34. Okay. How many mosquitoes have been tested, and how many have been found to have West Nile?
I don't know the actual number of tested, but we do have had 164 positive mosquito samples. And that's about 2.5 times what we saw this time last year.
Really? Up 2.5 times?
Yes.
But so far, no humans have tested positive.
No humans have tested positive, correct.
Is it unusual that you have that many mosquitoes who have tested positive, but no humans so far?
The way West Nile virus works is it's just the opportunity to be bitten by an infected mosquito increases with a number of mosquitoes that are actually out there infected. And we haven't seen a focal point of infection yet to have that really an increase in the number of infected mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. So we see it very widespread. We just haven't seen it focalized yet.
I imagine that a lot of people are asking why, and you examine that or investigate that. Because we had such a wet spring, is that the reason that we have so many more?
We had a lot of water, which gives them a lot of opportunity to reproduce themselves. And then it got very hot. Viral diseases tend to increase with the temperature.
Mm-hmm. So, again, and that kind of goes on to the next question, ways to avoid this.
Ways to avoid being infected West Nile?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. The best thing that any citizen can do is pretty much take care of their own properties. And that means removing any kind of habitat in their yard that may be collecting water. And oftentimes in backyards, you'll find things like artificial containers such as wheelbarrows, tarps that are covering wood piles. Mosquitoes love those. Bird baths, tires, anything you can think of that in that vein. In addition to rain gutters and downspouts, those black corrugated downspouts, each one of those corrugations has a little bit of water in there. And mosquitoes, they don't need a lot of water. They just need that water to last for a handful of days so the larval stage can emerge to the biting adult stage.
There are a lot of people nowadays, for environmental reasons, collect water, rainwater, and rain barrels. Now, most of those rain barrels have some covering to them. Is that one of the keys there? If you're going to do that, you have to have it covered?
Absolutely. You put one of those small mesh screens on top of the rain barrel to keep mosquitoes from getting in, and if they do get in, from getting out.
Mm-hmm. See, I always wondered about, you mentioned bird baths. Let's face it, that traditionally, I think of my grandmother's yard, and there was always a bird bath out front. I like to see the birds taking a little bath, when the weather was hot last week, cooling themselves off. But a place where mosquitoes can gather, right?
Right. Any water that's standing from between 5 and 7 days can produce mosquitoes. So if you are emptying out that water before that time frame, you've done your due diligence to remove mosquitoes from your property.
I mentioned that there are no humans that have tested positive for West Nile. How are humans impacted? I mean, how do symptoms present themselves when a human has contracted West Nile virus?
Well, typically you get flu-like symptoms, which is one of the reasons why it's somewhat difficult to diagnose West Nile virus in the early stages. 75 to 80% of people that are contract the virus pretty much recover from it without showing major symptoms, or maybe no symptoms at all in some cases. You get about 20% that will have some sort of fairly severe fever-like, flu-like symptoms, and then you'll have maybe about 1%, or you know, some low-level percent, around 1%, that may have very severe symptoms, including death. But you can have encephalitis causing neurological problems.
So it can be fatal.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Have we had fatalities here in Pennsylvania?
Absolutely. I don't know the exact number, but we have had a number of people die from West Nile virus.
Mm-hmm. So it's good news that so far no one has been identified with West Nile so far this year. And as I said, you keep records on this when it occurs during the season. Typically, have we had humans by July 9th that have contracted the disease?
We always have a couple of outliers this early in the season, but we see most of our human cases occur between the second week of August through the second week of October. And the reason we see that is because you have just so many more infected mosquitoes out there in the environment, and the opportunity to be bitten by an infected mosquito increases.
So when is the season, the limits for West Nile virus?
We begin our surveillance in May and end our surveillance in October.
So it basically goes through the warm weather months.
Correct.
And most of the time, we don't see mosquitoes after October?
We don't see a lot of disease. We do have a couple of, as Mike mentioned, we have 63 different species of mosquitoes, and each one of those species have a different season. So some are outside of that time frame, but the ones that we're interested in for West Nile virus generally occur between May and the end of October.
I know there are people who are thinking, well, we hear every day about temperatures rising, climate change. Will this has it had an impact, and will it have an impact in the future here in Pennsylvania?
We're kind of geographically, we're in an interesting location with Pennsylvania, in that we have a southern species that many people have heard of, or an Asian introduction called the Asian tiger mosquito, which was introduced in the southern United States in 1985 and has spread pretty quickly across the country. But Pennsylvania is pretty much at the northern extension of its range, and we've been able to track Aedes albopictus since it was first, I think in 1996 they found the first specimens, but it was very uncommon in Pennsylvania at that time. And we started our West Nile surveillance in the year 2000, and we've been able to track the expansion of that mosquito, the Asian tiger mosquito, throughout those years. So it's definitely been expanding its range within Pennsylvania slowly but surely. The problem with the cold weather is their eggs are not cold hardy, so it's very difficult for them to expand further and further north. So if climate change is going to have an effect, we would certainly see it in that particular species. And you know, whether it's climate change or not, we're not sure, but we have seen Aedes albopictus, the Asian tiger mosquito, definitely expanding its range in Pennsylvania.
I said 7 or 8 years earlier, and I did not realize, time flies,
yes,
that it's been since 2000 that the state has had a surveillance program. A listener emails, please mention BT treatments for residential use.
Bacillus thuringiensis, BTI, is the acronym for what the gentleman's talking about. It's something that will kill mosquitoes, and you can pick it up at home improvement stores like Lowe's, Ace Hardware, and you can put that right in the water. And some of those formulations will last up to 30 days, and it will kill mosquitoes that are inside the water.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so as we know, the mosquitoes gather around water. What about humans protecting themselves so that they're not bitten in the first place?
You We always recommend that you wear like an insect repellent. There's a whole list of different formulations available from the CDC. And I also heard an interesting story on NPR this morning about permethrin on your clothing. Not only does that protect against ticks, but it will also protect against mosquitoes. Mosquitoes that are involved in West Nile virus transmission are most active at dusk. So if you are out during those evening hours and it's not too hot, you can wear long sleeve clothes or et cetera to protect yourself against being bitten.
I'm going to ask you a question that I don't know whether you could answer or not, but my wife probably would like to know this because she gets bitten constantly. Why some people are more prone to being bitten by mosquitoes than others?
Well, that certainly is true. That does
happen. Oh, I know
that
it's true.
That does happen. And you really want to find a friend that is prone to being bitten, so that'll protect you.
Okay, so now when the wife and I are out on the patio or the deck, I can send them her way.
Yes. But probably the main attractant is carbon dioxide, which we're all giving off as we pretty much exist and breathe. But there are other attractants as a mosquito gets closer to potential hosts to determine whether they want to feed on that host or not. And it could be lactic acid. There's a whole variety of chemical cocktail that we're giving off unbeknownst to us, and also other animals are as well. So maybe some of these bird biting or frog biting mosquitoes will be attracted to the carbon dioxide, but they get close enough, and then there's other cues that aren't as interesting to them, so they'll fly on.
Well, like what?
Well, lactic acid would be one.
Which is what's lactic acid?
Lactic acid is something that builds up in your muscles as you exercise, and you know, if you get completely exhausted, that probably means your body is filled with lactic acid. But mosquitoes can detect that. They have the chemical sensory mechanisms in their antennae that they can detect that chemical, as well as a whole host of other ones as well.
So I'm going to relax all day if I'm going to sit out at night.
That may be helpful.
Okay, I see. It's coming from an expert, so I think it's a good idea. So what's the state doing to try to control these mosquitoes or eradicate them?
Well, we have we grant 38 different counties to do the mosquito surveillance and mosquito control. And those 38 counties are the counties that are at most risk for West Nile virus. And their general operations are to do the mosquito surveillance, and when they identify a risk, step in with habitat reduction, larval mosquito control, and if necessary, they feel that the mosquito population presents a risk of West Nile virus or a risk of someone becoming sick. They will do adult mosquito control to reduce the numbers.
Mm-hmm. I was curious when you were talking about birds earlier. We've heard of spraying programs. Are the animals, the mammals that the mosquitoes feed on, any harm, any danger to them from the spraying program?
No, there's no danger presented to the mammal population or bird population from any of the activities that we do.
Mm-hmm. So how exactly do you spray? I mean, is it from planes, helicopters, or what?
When we categorize it as spraying activities, most of those things are 99% of all of the events that we do are larval control events or habitat reduction events, removing tires, tipping over buckets, and only a very small percent are the adult mosquito spraying, or the synonymous where everybody has the idea of trucks running through their neighborhood with these sprayers mm-hmm. on it. Mm-hmm. So it's a very small portion of what we actually do.
How long does a mosquito live?
Depending on the environmental conditions, temperature, wind, 3 weeks.
So it's not a long time.
No, it's not.
So it doesn't make a lot of sense then to concentrate your efforts on the adults.
No, it does not. I mean, we want to target them when they're in that aquatic habitat before they leave that aquatic habitat and disperse to all of throughout the environment. If we can get them when they're in the water, it's so much easier and more efficient.
Mm-hmm. We only have a minute left, and there are a lot of information that you guys have imparted today. But one final word, recommendations for those listening today.
If you're out during the evening hours, and you can wear personal protection, any of the insect repellents. But my biggest recommendation is to reduce the standing water around your home. We have a famous saying that if you're breeding them, you're feeding them, meaning if you're producing mosquitoes on your property, you're going to be bitten by them. We also have a very great website. It's westnile.state.pa.us, where we update with all of our spraying events and all of our positives. So if you want more information, you can find it out there.
And we'll put a link on our website, WITF.org, to that. Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. Matt Helwig and Mike Hutchinson with the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection's Vector Management Team. You know, that is a cool name, Vector Management Team. You guys should have uniforms that say that. Do you have?
Not a bad idea. I'll look into it.
All right, look into that. Not taxpayer funded. I'll put that out there. But thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Coming up Wednesday, we have a Smart Talk road trip to the George Spangler Farm in Gettysburg. And if you'd like to attend, watch the broadcast, and participate, you can do that. Go to WITF.org/events and RSVP. But we do have some openings. That's for Wednesday's Smart Talk.